Hello and welcome to the journalism.co.uk podcast, a show where we bring you insights from media industry experts to help journalists do their jobs better. I'm your host, Jacob Granger. Today, we're talking about how to pull off a community listening project. Too often, we think about news engagement and avoidance in terms of clicks and metrics, when really, we need to go beyond the data and speak to real people about what's really going on. Now, we might attempt to do this in the form of focus groups or audience interviews, but the trouble with those frameworks is they are agenda-driven, and the people you want to get on side are already very wary of you having an agenda. So is there another way? Shirish Kulkarni is a News Innovation Research Fellow at Media Kimry, and he's just wrapped up the News for All project, a six-month collaboration with the BBC to understand why marginalised communities don't engage with the news. He enlisted the help of a community organisation and space called Grange Pavilion to put on monthly meetups in Cardiff. Shirish joins me with Abdi Yusuf and Rhiannon White, both from the Grange Pavilion, and we'll discover how they managed to get people to lower their guards and engage with discussions about the news. Stay tuned for trust-building tips borrowed from the world of theatre so you can do this for yourself too. Shirish, I'll come to you first. The News for All project really set out to challenge this term we hear so much about, news avoidance. And you sought to do this really by engaging with a local community to better understand why they were disengaging with the news. Is that about right? And can you expand slightly?
Yeah, kind of. Like, I don't think we set out to do anything. In a way, the whole point was that it was as open as possible. Because in a way, partly that's the problem with so-called engagement activities that the journalism industry does, because, you know, the industry is always asking, how can we better understand our audiences? But kind of astonishingly, the answer to that question is rarely by asking them, right? Because that's the obvious answer, but very few of the initiatives in the industry actually do that. And, you know, there are lots and lots of so-called audience and engagement editors sitting in an office looking at a dashboard. Yeah, and that's so-called engagement. And I'm going to say it, we are never going to understand our citizens looking at dashboards. And even when we do engage, that's largely in the context of focus groups, right? Where really the whole methodology of that is to validate a decision that's already been made. And that we were doing, in a sense, the opposite. We didn't have an answer in mind. We wanted to ask the question in a different way. And I think the interesting bit is the who you ask, the what you ask, and how you ask it. And that's the bit where we really try to innovate, because anything else is largely done through the lens of the industry rather than the lens of the citizen or the audience. And what we wanted to do was do all this through the lens of citizens.
Got it. Yeah, I think that's really a great point, you know, going beyond the data and the clicks to understand why people are engaged or not engaging. And I think there is really the fundamental difference between audiences and communities. And I think the really valuable part is that Rhiannon and Abzi both don't come from a journalism background. So I'm going to start there for a moment. To you, Rhiannon, first, and Abdi, I'll come to you with the same question, which is, what is your background and what is your perception of how your local community in Cardiff is served by the news, either locally or nationally?
Great. Thanks, Jacob. So my background is that I grew up on a council estate in East Cardiff called St. Mellons. It's a very demonised council estate, as many council estates are. So when I was growing up, it was famous for the kind of vilification of single mums, who the Secretary of State of Wales, called John Redwood at the time, was vilifying single mums, saying they're all getting pregnant to get council houses, they should have their children taken off them, put into care. And it was the first time when my estate was everywhere in the papers, the national headlines of like, check out this council estate, this is where all the bad people live, these single mothers are doing terrible things. And I was actually from a single parent family myself. So I was like, that's my mum they're talking about. So my experience of growing up in Cardiff and my relationship with journalism hasn't been great, to be honest, from the start, because it's been othering. It's been like not nuanced. It's not been sharing the reality or the lens of what my experience was, which is very different to that experience. So like my mum wasn't getting pregnant to get a council house. It was a means to an end. We had a lovely house, and actually she was working three jobs to provide for her family. So from the start, already flagged that kind of lack of trust, I guess, and authenticity, and the lack of kind of detail and nuance. Obviously, it wasn't the journalist's fault that those things got said about my community, but the roundness, the fullness of how it reported, and then also the legacy of what that left on my community 30 years ago. So I think there's something there for me around the responsibility of journalism and how people think about the kind of impact and legacy that it might leave when it isn't done well, or thinking about the stories that are told and what that does to a place and a people. It's not just like a group of people, that's a whole community, that's a large amount of people. So I run a theatre company in Cardiff called Commonwealth, and Commonwealth is two words, common as in poor, and wealth is in all the experiences and power that comes from being poor or in common.
I read from that there's this healing quality, right, where there are these grievances about how communities are served. Really, to truly move forward, these need to be validated, but also, you know, improved upon, you know, as we move forward. Is that about right?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Got it. Okay, Abdi, same question to you. What's your background and what's your perspective on how your local community has been served by the news, either locally or nationally?
I came here at 6 years old as a refugee into the UK. I'm also of African descent, so I've got that. I'm also Muslim, so I've got that as well. But I'm also working class, and I also grew up in a council estate. So when you combine all of those things, you can
there's a
lot of layers. The reason I avoid the news is probably to protect my imagination. And I think imagination is really important for creativity, and also imagining the future. And that's how I see it. So it's damaging stereotypes, effectively a form of control, and demonizing a community and labeling them in a very small way.
In what way do you feel labeled, Abdi, if I can ask?
It's when we see news about a person of color, is how we describe an area being as a poor, run-down area. For example, I come from Bute Town, which is historically it's one of the most diverse communities in Wales. And it was a mining community, and there was many seamen who came to Bute Town. So Bute Town has historically had a really bad label in the news, and it's always had been demonised. But right now, it's also an area which has got the most, you know, university graduates in the whole city.
It doesn't align with your perception of what the community stands for and what it
represents. Yeah, so it's a community that's very well educated, but it's also a community which really lacks opportunities.
Okay. These are very powerful backstories, Shirish, and I do wonder, you know, when you do a project like this, like a news project, where did you find out about Rhiannon and Abdi, and how can others find their own Rhiannon and Abdis?
I mean, it's a really good point, because the truth is I'd known Rhiannon for maybe 5 years before. And actually, it's worth saying that I first met Rhiannon when I was a community organiser at the Bureau of Investigative Journalism. And Rhiannon had applied and then was taking part in a big kind of consultation that we'd done along similar themes. But I'd also worked with other people at the Grange Pavilion for similar times, 5 or 6 years. And I think it's an important point, because you can't start from scratch, right? You know, it takes time to build up relationships of trust. So if we're thinking about how do you do a community listening project, if you don't have those relationships, start now.
You've got to start from the seeds, because they're not ripe for harvest yet.
No, I've been in those meetings where, you know, at big newsrooms, they say, we need to rebuild trust with our communities. Let's do that tomorrow. And that is not how that works, right? You don't marry someone the day after you've met them.
Well, you could. It might not go well for you.
Well, it usually doesn't go very well, right? And that's the point. You have to kind of create those relationships. And truthfully, as well, what I'd add to that is I show up, not just at the Grange Pavilion, but with the other partners in the East, when there's nothing in it for me. right? When actually it's just helping out, volunteering at things, doing stuff, because that's how you build trust, right? And journalists have this notion of, you know, objectivity and distance and blah, blah, blah. I mean, A, that's nonsense. But B, that doesn't work in this context. You know, you trust people. Like, sometimes people say, but how do you get people to trust you? And the answer is, you do trustworthy things.
If you want people to trust you, do trustworthy things. I think that's a great way of describing the point of this project, which was based on a principle called design justice. In a nutshell, it means if you design for the most marginalized people, you arrive at the most universal solutions. This is why the first few sessions were really about building trust, getting to know who was in the room and what their experiences are. And that goes for the organisers too. Expect people to have their guards up, and you as the news organisation will need to earn their trust. Food helps, that gets people relaxed and more likely to open up. Informal conversations can turn into more structured ones as you start to get people more comfortable. And that's what we're going to dig into next.
First exercise we did, for example, was we drew each other. We sat opposite each other and we drew each other, but we drew each other with our non-dominant hand. And then we swapped, and then we introduced ourselves with a story of our name. And it could have been like who you are, how you were named, or what your name means, or you could have made something up. But what that did was that kind of go, okay, this is us in the room, these pictures are us, and this is our starting point, this is the beginning, this is who we are as people. And also it gave loads of insight into, like, you know, where people come from, or what their family was like, or what their mum might have been listening to on the radio at the time. You know, like, it just kind of set the tone of, like, the invitation is bring all of yourself. And then we would do things like have a series of questions that maybe we would write together, or I would prepare in advance with a mirror, and we put them in the middle of the room and folded up, and then we would open them and one person might answer. And that exercise was particularly good because it allowed people to have a structure they could sit inside of with rules, but also it allowed people to be vulnerable.
Sounds like that is, you know, a starting point to get people to a vulnerable place, if you can show that you can't draw with your left hand or whatever, you know.
Exactly. And actually people are better often drawing with their non-dominant hand because they're not thinking, they're not self-conscious, they're just doing the task. But the vulnerability thing was really important because also we all took part in that. And there was a really beautiful moment where Sirish was quite vulnerable with one of his personal stories. And I felt the room just like drop in and be like, oh, we're all human here. We're all connected. And we can all relate to these feelings right here, all these experiences. And that felt really important because it just kind of, it builds the gang, right? Everyone's like, okay, we've got something to connect on, and this is our starting point. You know, we moved on to like our feelings around the news, where we would ask questions and, you know, we'd have agree, disagree, somewhere in the middle. And then practically moving on to like, okay, what if the news was an app? What would that look like? Or like, what are the different ways that we can use or receive the news? What things do we need to have in order to live better lives from the news? Or
is this the theatre inspiration coming through here, Rhiannon, or is that something else?
I think it's a mixture of both. Like the beginning bit was definitely more theatre, because I work a lot with tasks in theatre, because the theatre I'm making is more documentary style. So it is about people's lives, and it's about people who wouldn't normally perform having the courage to do that and to tell their story in a very honest and truthful way. Whereas then halfway through, there was like a process of merging kind of prototyping, kind of innovation, journalism. Like, we had the expertise of Suze and Hannah, who were from the R&D department of the BBC. So they were able to really open up like all the possibilities and imagination of what things could look like. With our participants, we were able to really dream around how that could be applied.
So there's really three parts here to remember. One, get people to a place where they are comfortable with sharing and being vulnerable. You will need to start slow and small. And that example of drawing yourself with your non-dominant hand is just one idea. Two, you want to open the floor to larger and more personal questions afterwards, which you can simply do by drawing questions out of a hat and writing them down on sticky notes. Then three, you move to more hypothetical and prototyping scenarios. What should the news look like? How can it serve a community? You can't just jump in at the deep end, because as we'll hear next, people are very media literate and their distrust towards the news is very real.
There is a world outside of our sectors where there are so many different networks that exist, like a spider web of networks. And that's kind of what we drew from. So we drew from the networks of organizations, but then we drew from networks of friends, family, community members. Like, it got quite wide. Like, one example is Amira invited Mohammed, who used to work with her, and John Lewis selling coffee. Like, amazing that Mohammed would even consider coming, because it was totally something he would never ever dream of doing. And just seeing the value of, like, that lens of experience that he might bring to the table was really super valuable. And like Sirish said, it was working with marginalized voices, and that was, like, intersectional. You know, we had people who were white working class, who were disabled, who were of different heritage from around the world, who've come from Cardiff but maybe came from Swansea. And I think the thing that united the whole group was the sense of injustice.
Mohammed's a really good example, right? Because Amira, who was co-facilitating with Ren, asked Mohammed. Mohammed came, we had like a little kind of session before, just so people could ask questions before we even started, see if it was for them. And Mohammed was so cynical, so kind of suspicious. And he was like, well, this is convenient timing, isn't it? And so it was absolutely like, thought this was, you know, a trap in a way to get into the inbox. But actually, because Rhiannon and I were working together on this, he saw that we'd built up the relationships, you know, he knew Amira, and he took part, and he had such an important perspective to bring. And I think that was true for lots of people as well. And we always wanted to start with what's in it for them, right? Journalism stuff generally starts with what's in it for us? How can we get the insights we need? And I think you always get better outcomes by thinking first, what's in it for them? What's the value of being here? And a lovely thing about it was, like, groups of people formed who'd never met before, but maybe traveled from the same place. And then they ended up coming together, sharing taxis, sharing trains, and just becoming really good friends as a result. And that's, you know, when we're talking about community, when we talk about creating networks, that felt really important that we could help facilitate that. Yeah.
There's an important question on this, because I know, Shirish, we spoke about this ahead of time. Like, an important part of the trust building process was just to allow them that release valve to have their say and just get that venting out the way to begin with. Was that an important ingredient here?
I think it really was, and I think the backdrop is really important. Like, it was against the backdrop of what was happening in Gaza. The majority of our participants are Muslim, and we had some people who are Palestinian in the group, and we could really sense the lack of trust, the kind of fear in people, the kind of uncertainty of what is happening, how is this happening to people who look like me, and no one's saying anything. And also to acknowledge that the BBC were part of this process in some way. And there were times where, like, very honestly, that, you know, some of our participants were protesting outside the BBC, or where there was moments where I was like, can I do this? Do I believe in this because of the BBC? I know Amira had the same feelings, but also seeing the bigger picture and trusting Sirish. So yeah, that felt really important to us, I think, Abdi. I don't know if you felt the same about that starting point.
Yeah, I think like, if we look at one of the most powerful things about the whole thing was it was the realization that we're all connected, and in an age where individualism is so big, we really learned about each other, but also we got to the same point of about how news was impacting our lives.
What did you see as effective in getting people to listen and engage with conversations where they weren't previously?
I think for me, one of the most important things was actually realizing just how much the community sort of understood the news. If something is affecting you and your community, then you've got a far deeper understanding of the errors, bits which are dehumanizing to you, or the bits which are misrepresenting you, you can see them more clearly. Mm-hmm. And it's actually, that's the reason why people are avoiding the news.
And Shirish, I'm going to twist the question slightly for you. Mm-hmm. But I mean, clearly what can come out of these conversations can be uncomfortable truths, can be things that can, you know, really shake the bird's cage. Is there any point doing this work if your organization is not willing to listen to maybe the uncomfortable truth at the very end of it?
I mean, of course not, because, I mean, of course there are going to be some uncomfortable truths. That's the point, right? Because we want to hear something different than we've heard before, because, you know, the report contains things which will be uncomfortable truths for both the BBC and for the whole journalism industry as a whole. But as an industry, I think we have to come to terms with the fact that however uncomfortable they are, it doesn't stop them being truths, right? It doesn't stop people thinking or feeling those things, whether we want to kind of brush them under the carpet or not. That is what people think and feel. So it's totally futile to kind of ignore this, because otherwise we're only doing the things or responding to things which we're comfortable with. And it's like, that is not going to fix journalism. That's not going to, you know, provide a sustainable, equitable future for journalism. Like I say, we don't have all the answers, but I think we've, I suppose, demonstrated one way that we can do the kinds of things that clearly as an industry we need to do.
Mm. Would you do anything differently if you, next time you do this, Shiraj?
I think the important thing was that we worked in that the terminology is sort of asset-based, but what it is it's starting with the point of view of what is right with people and communities, not what's wrong with them. And so I think the point there that Abdi made was like, they are very news literate. The industry thinks, oh, they just don't understand how incredible our journalism is. Here's a news literacy campaign so they can understand. They understand the centralization of ownership in newsrooms. They understand the lack of diversity and inclusion. They understand, you know, the motivations of media barons, and that's why they're not engaging with journalism.
In a very practical way there, Shiraj, how would you take that realization into another community listening project?
To be honest, I would step back even more than I did, because I think probably my views still shaped some of the conversations, and actually that's fine. And I don't think we got bad outcomes, but I would, if anything, step back even more than I did, because I would have even greater trust in
communities. Place more trust into the community and the people that are doing the groundwork in the listening project. I hear that. I really do. Could you share how the newsroom has used the experience or insights since or during the project? You know?
The insights are there for people to use. It is up to newsrooms if, how, and when they want to put those into action. Yeah, we did everything we could to build buy-in with the BBC and with other organisations as well. But ultimately, it's up to them how they do that, right? The thing we say at the end of the report is the answers are there. We just need to listen now.
Got it. You mentioned the report. I'll put a link to that full report in the comments so everyone can read it for themselves. There are some really great sort of cutout strategies that people can, you know, use in their own newsroom. One of my favorites is the journalists in residence idea. No time for that today, but you know, have a look at the report. We'll leave a link to it. But I think this has been great. You know, thank you, Abdi, Rhiannon, Shiraj, for your time today, and pleasure to have you all. And we'll speak again very soon. Thank you so much. So I think the takeaway from today is that trust goes both ways. You're not going to heal long-standing, deep grievances held by marginalised communities overnight, but you can start now with very small steps. Convene spaces and find partners with established and trusted networks. This project is all going to work on trust, so be prepared to take a step back and let your partners take the reins. That gets you in a room with people, but now you have to prove that you come in good faith. It'll take time for people to warm to you, and some may not warm to you at all. So put on a spread, show your credentials, and work your way to exercises that make people feel comfortable in being vulnerable. The News for All project has some great cutout strategies for you to try as well. I'll leave a link to that article or head to media.cymru. But what did you learn from today? Let's continue the conversation. I'm on LinkedIn, or you can email me on jacob@journalism.co.uk. You can check out all of our episodes on all of your usual podcast platforms like Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Just search and subscribe to the journalism.co.uk podcast. But that's all we have time for this week. I've been your host, Jacob Granger. Thanks so much for listening. Till next time.